What's up, gentlemen? This is Rising Phoenix Podcast, a podcast about how to rise up after your divorce. I'm your host, divorce coach, Michael Rhodes. Let's get into it. Joining me today is Dr. Taylor Damiani. Dr. Taylor, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, happy to. So I'm a psychologist. I am a parental narcissism recovery coach and someone who's walked this path. And so from my own personal experiences as an adult child of a narcissistic parent, I took that and decided to channel it into the work that I do. It's my passion. I work with adult children of narcissistic parents to help them reclaim their lives, their sense of self, their voice. And I run a program called Reclaim You, Heal from Narcissistic Parents. And I love it. I love what I do. I love my clients. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. Happy
That's
to be
awesome.
Here.
That's awesome. Thank you. So let's just jump right into it. But first, now I didn't put this in the outline, but it just hit me. I like to define things. I think it's really important for us to define things. And I know everyone probably has a different definition about what a narcissist is, but what is your definition of a narcissist?
This is such a hard question, and it's so ironic because it's like what I do.
Right.
But so it can look, people's experiences of narcissism can look so differently, but usually what I find and what is the some of the central tenets when I talk to my clients are there's a general lack, a huge lack of empathy, a lack of being able to reflect and look inward, to take accountability and responsibility for your actions, inability to step inside another person's shoes and understand what their experience is. I'll start with that.
Okay.
There's a lot more that we can say about what a narcissist is, but those are kind of the things that stand out to me most.
Do you think that, again, this is why I create an outline, because here's a rabbit hole. Do you think that this is an overused word in today's society? Because I feel like it is, but maybe I'm wrong.
It's definitely become a buzzword for sure.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like anything, I think it has pros and cons. I think yes, the cons of it is, you know, we're calling everyone a narcissist, and then it,
right,
you know, it's just used inappropriately, and but I think the pros of it is it's gaining awareness in you know, people's in society. And I think that it's growing in people. So it's growing in people's awareness, and people are getting more awareness and education about what narcissism is and what it looks like. And that's opening up a lot of doors for healing and growth. So yes, to answer your question, yes, it's a bit of a buzzword.
Yeah.
And it's also a thing, and it's real, and it
True.
Exists. So there is truth to it. There is validity to it. There's
yeah.
both.
So again, another rabbit hole. Can a narcissist recognize they are one, and can they heal or change or grow, whatever the appropriate path could be? I don't know if growth or change is the right
yeah.
word.
Yeah. Short answer, usually no. A narcissist will rarely admit or acknowledge that they are a narcissist. Why? Because that requires reflection. That requires the ability to look inward, to self-reflect, which is a skill that most people, most narcissists, most people with narcissistic tendencies lack. They don't have. Can they change? Short answer, usually not. No. You're going to be waiting a long time if you're, you know, for waiting for someone to change. Now, I mean, I'll never say never.
Sure.
Has it happened in the history of the world that a narcissist can change? Yeah. Yeah, probably. In my experience, no.
Gotcha. Okay. So back to the topic at hand. With all that said, then, how do you know if your parents, one or the other or both, and that's another interesting avenue, are indeed narcissists? How do you know that?
Yeah. So because there's different types of narcissists, there's not a one size fits all. No two narcissists look the same. So it's a little bit, it's complex, right? But some characteristics that you might notice in your parent are maybe they have a grandiose sense of self-importance. Maybe they believe that they're special or unique. Maybe they require a lot of admiration and praise. Maybe they have a really big sense of entitlement. That's a big one. Maybe they are interpersonally exploitative, manipulative, using other people, taking advantage of other people. Lack of empathy is a huge one that we'll see. There's also, more covert signs of narcissism, where these are things that you might not, they're not maybe the textbook grandiose narcissist, but things like having just a lack of a sense of self. Maybe they have the ability to make you feel guilty even when something is not your fault. Maybe they're very sensitive to criticism. Inability to feel genuine remorse, blaming other people constantly, inability to apologize or take responsibility, extreme lack of empathy. These are a bunch of different signs that may resonate for you. Some of them may fit, not all of them, but those are some of the main things that stand out to me, that are about the narcissist.
I just scribbled a couple of things down. Lack of empathy seems to be that you mentioned that a few times, and I know this is, might sound or might be a silly question, but what does that look like? I mean, I know what empathy is, but can we talk about sort of like some scenarios that would indeed confirm that yes, this my parent has no empathy for me?
Sure. So, yeah, I think, we all kind of have an idea of what empathy is. It's the ability to really, I like to use the definition of the ability to step inside someone else's shoes and feel around in those shoes and say, yeah, I can get what they're feeling. I can get that this is hard. Like, it's like when you, example, if you share that, okay, so before we were talking, we were commiserating about life, right?
Yes. Yes, we were.
And how life is not fair
It
sometimes.
sure isn't.
And if you shared that with your narcissistic parent, would they be able to take that and hold that gently and honor that? Or would they say something like, yeah, life's hard and then you die? Or like I have been told,
Oh
or
my God, that sounds like my mom. Like, exactly. That's crazy.
so it's does your parent, can they respect your emotional world, your inner world, and honor it in a way that, hey, if I were going through that pain, if they were going through that pain, would I want someone to treat me this way? So, or is it just complete lack of understanding someone else's world? So when you tell me, oh man, yeah, today was rough, Taylor. And I say, yeah, that's nice. Great. Yeah. But I mean, I've had it so much worse. I've had it so much worse than you. So that's an example. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I wonder, it makes me wonder again, if you see me scribbling, it's not that I'm like, I'm just, it's, if I don't write it down, I might forget
Yeah, scribble away.
it. Is that potentially a lack of ability to handle emotions? Or is that definitely a calling card for a narcissist? Because I just wonder, like, is it possible that sometimes, at least in my, and I'm not trying to get my mom off the hook or anything of that nature, but I'm just wondering out loud, is it potentially that she just didn't, she couldn't handle other people's emotions because she couldn't handle her own, so she couldn't deal with mine, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
Totally, 100%. Yeah. So just to answer your question, just because someone doesn't have the emotional capacity or the emotional maturity does not equal narcissism. Someone can
Gotcha.
be emotionally immature and not be a narcissist. However, someone who is a narcissist is usually always emotionally immature. So, yes, not having or having a lack of empathy is just one thing. It doesn't make you a narcissist. But it is a very big thing. It's one of the central things that I talk about when I talk about narcissism, because it's one of the big ones.
It sure sounds like it. So, to move it forward, so if you're a child of a narcissist, what does that do to, and this is why I wanted to have you on. This, I mean, the other stuff is I'm very interested in, and I love having these discussions with people that are way smarter than I am. But I really wanted to apply this to how did this affect adult relationships, romantic relationships, in a way that could have led to a divorce? Because I would imagine that having a narcissistic parent would skew your ability to have a healthy adult romantic relationship.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. So, how we are raised has an impact on so much, on just so much. So, how we are brought up and loved and cared for, or lack thereof, by our parents impacts how we relate to other people. It impacts our relationships with ourself and our relationships with other people. Our attachment style is informed by our upbringing. If you were loved and your parents met your needs and you felt loved and cared for, then you grew up with a secure attachment. You grow into an adult who has secure attachment, can have healthy relationships with other people. But if you grew up where your needs weren't met or honored, and you didn't feel loved or cared or worthy of your parents' love growing up, then yeah, you're going to develop an insecure attachment style. You're going to develop a, anxious, avoidant, et cetera, attachment style. So we develop a certain attachment style based on how we were raised and loved. So what that can look like, that impacts every relationship we have, not just romantic relationships, but every single relationship we have, like I said, not just with others, but the relationship we have with ourselves, one of the most important relationships we'll have. So, what does that look like? Well, if you're anything like my clients, then when they first come in, typically they're anxious, they're burned out from helping and fixing and caretaking and peacekeeping, usually very codependent. They might be acutely perceptive of other people's needs, but struggle to put their own needs first, struggle to put themselves first. They're used to putting their needs on the back burner, focusing on everyone else. They feel overly responsible for other people's feelings and needs. They try to control what's outside of their control. They have abandoned themselves completely. They grapple with the feeling that their worth is in caretaking for other people. They're also exhausted from constantly walking on eggshells with other people, worrying about what they say and do. And they are usually paralyzed by self-criticism, perfectionism, people-pleasing, judgment, shame, feeling like they have to prove their self-worth and earn other people's love and approval. They might feel like they've lost themselves. Maybe after years of self-sacrifice, of making themselves small, and they might be left wondering, well, who am I if I'm not taking care of everyone else? And this desire to fix and hold everyone else's pain can get in the way. But it's, it can manifest, this upbringing can manifest in self-criticism, doubt, insecurity, not knowing who we are, not having a sense of self. I could go on and on and on, but I'll pause there.
It's so often when I do these things, I sort of put myself in situations or whatever that, I mean, it reminds me of things or it brings up thoughts or so sometimes I'm listening through obviously my lens, right? And so
Yeah.
the truth is I was called a narcissist at the end of my marriage. I don't necessarily think that's true, but I mean, I'm sure there's some truth to it. I do sometimes think I'm pretty fucking awesome, but not every day. But so when you're talking about some of these things, I'm like, what did I do that? Did I do this? So if you see me kind of spacing out, I'm hearing you 100%, but I'm also sort of processing in a way that is sort of applying to my life. So
Yeah.
one of the things that it made me think about is I mean, obviously, then you will, if you were raised in a certain way and your relationship with, I had a couple things there. Actually, let me back up.
Sure.
Is it when we're talking about a narcissistic parent, is it typically one or is it both?
It can either or it can be
Either
both. You
or.
can have
Okay.
two narcissistic parents, or you can have what's really common is a narcissistic parent and a codependent and an enabling parent.
Okay. So that leads me to then, is it typical that if your parent, one of them, either one of them is a narcissist, then you're going to end up sort of, I think you kind of mentioned attachment style. So you're going to be more of an anxious person, an anxious attachment style. And so then are you going to find typically the avoidant person and is a narcissist typically an avoidant type of attachment style?
You can, so someone with narcissistic tendencies or traits will usually have some sort of attachment style that is not secure. So it could be disorganized,
Okay.
avoidant, or anxious. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not going to peg all narcissists as having, the same attachment
Okay.
style, but it's usually not secure,
Sure.
and we can replicate those relationships that we're, that we that were modeled for us in our upbringing. We can usually replicate those. So if our parents were narcissistic, sometimes, oftentimes, we might find ourselves in a romantic relationship with a narcissist because that's what feels natural to us. We're replicating that pattern.
And it makes me think, like, what, how would you, how do people that you, that your clients come to you, how do they, what is it that makes them go, I might be that other side of that narcissist? Like, I might be like, why, if you're treated, and I know this is going to sound a little bit like victim blaming, but I swear to God it isn't. But if you're treated poorly, like, how does that not, like, but I guess, and I interviewed someone else about this, we're more focused on just narcissism, but I guess it is because of those patterns of your youth, right? That you just think it's normal. But then that leads me to ask the question, what is it that leads to an awakening or whatever you want to call it? Like what sort of turns the light bulb on, so to speak?
That's a great question. Well, I would ask you the same question, but to you and all everyone listening, like in any sort of toxic or unhealthy relationship, what was the light bulb for you? So, and it's usually not just a one and done, like,
Yeah,
oh, I get it now. It's usually it's a pattern. And usually as it is with most of my clients, it's this pattern of just being emotionally fed up, having gone on this emotional roller coaster, the soul-sucking roller coaster of fear and guilt and obligation, and just being spun around in loops and eventually being really tired of these unhealthy dynamics and relational patterns that are just repeated over and over again. And it's getting to that point and saying, this isn't working for me anymore. This isn't healthy. I'm banging my head against a wall, expecting a different result. How many more years am I going to be banging my head against a wall? So usually, because narcissism is so insidious, it takes time, years. Sometimes it could take even decades to realize that this is what you're dealing with. But yeah, I forget the question now.
Well, I mean, I like simplicity. I'm always like, what is it that, what is the, why do people wake up and suddenly realize it?
Oh.
And what I'm hearing, I think, is essentially it's just a wearing out sort of situation where you just get too, it just becomes too much. It's a gradual, we just get fed up and it's just too much. And I wonder how much that compares to normal relationships where regardless of if a partner is a narcissist or not, if there's poor treatment, and I'm sure there are other psychological type of issues that lead to poor treatment within a marriage or a relationship.
Yeah.
But is it, it sounds like it's a cumulative effect that eventually it just becomes too much. And I guess it's up to the individual to what is their breaking point.
Yeah, just like anything else.
Yeah.
What What are your values? How do you want to live this life? Are you living the life that you want to live? Are you the person that you want to be? And I mean, easy question to ask, but
Right.
easier said than done, you
Sure.
know? And we can feel one way or we can know, yeah, this isn't working for me, but it can take us years to change our lives. Change isn't easy. And, you know, especially when you're in a toxic relationship, sometimes we choose the devil we know.
Yeah.
Change is hard.
So,
It's
all that said, and like I said, sometimes this stuff, like, because that's, like I said, that's what she called me at the end, amongst many other things. And it makes me go, well, geez, was I terrible, or was I, you know? And of course, I'm a human, so I made many mistakes, many, 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 many.
Sure.
But then I think about, you know, her lens and her narrative and all the different things that sort of factor in. And so I go to therapy. So I feel like I'm not a narcissist. Maybe I have some traits. I mean, I think I do like myself sometimes. Sometimes I don't, right? But yeah,
That's what I think we all have, you know, some narcissistic traits, or narcissism is on a spectrum, you know,
Yes.
it's
Yes.
but liking yourself doesn't mean you're a narcissist.
Right. Well, and the when you're going through, so you know, hopefully, I don't know if you're married or if you've been divorced, or I don't recommend it at all, ever. So,
I'm married.
don't get divorced. It's
Okay, because you said
well, that could you please? I'm gonna send you an email, and I want you to print out and sign it and take a picture and send it back. It's terrible. But not
Yeah.
only is it terrible, but the person typically in today's world, it is women that are leaving men. 70% of divorces are filed in America are filed by women. College educated women, it's actually 80%. I've seen someone say 90, but I don't think that's correct. So, when they're leaving, these women that do, and there absolutely are cases where it's justified and all that kind of good stuff. But regardless of that, when someone is leaving a relationship, the narrative about the person they're leaving has to change into, you don't say about the person that you're leaving that, man, he is just the best. I love him so much, but I gotta go, right? You have to sort of change the narrative. And so not only are you being left, but you're being called all kinds of shit. Like, and it's so it's hard, but
Yeah.
I'm definitely getting off track here. But
No, that's okay.
let me pull it back around. If you were a child of a narcissistic parent, you married a narcissist, and I do see this too. So I run a Facebook group. There's over 7,000 men in there,
Wow.
I do see this storyline as well. But you're a guy, and you as a child, you had a narcissistic parent. You married a narcissistic wife, and you want to get away and get out, and you do that. What do you do now to heal? What are the steps you need to take to become healed? Yeah.
That's a great question. So I would start with those questions that I just asked you, which is, are you who you want to be? Who is the person that you want to be? Are you living the life you want to live? What does that mean to you? What does that look like to you? After we are getting out of a narcissistic relationship or, you know, just a toxic, unhealthy relationship of any kind, we've lost ourselves. We can feel like we've lost ourselves wholly or a piece of ourselves. And our work is to reclaim ourselves. How can we reclaim who we are? How can we get to know ourselves? Maybe you don't know who you are fully. I can speak with from my clients and my
Sure.
own personal experience.
Sure.
We don't know who we are. And because we have spent so much time and energy focusing on just surviving this toxic relationship, once we have moved beyond that relationship and gone no contact or ended that relationship or whatever, then we're left to pick up the pieces. We're left with this question of who am I? Who am I? We get to build who we are. We get to create that. We may not know. So that would be, that's what I talk about with my clients is how can you reclaim yourself? How can you get to know yourself? Maybe you don't know what you're, who you are, what your likes are, your dislikes, your passions, your dreams, your goals. Great. Now's the time to go and figure that out. How can you develop a relationship with you? Instead of focusing on this other person that you've focused on for so long, how about developing a relationship with yourself? That's our work.
I mean, that sounds exactly like what I tell guys that are going through divorce. I mean, because not necessarily doesn't even have to be a toxic relationship. It could be, but just the end of it, is so identity smashing because you identify as a husband, as a family, as a, there's, yeah, we still have a family, yeah, whatever. It's not the same. So there is a need to attack this in a similar way. I mean, attack might be the wrong word, but to go at this in a similar way. You have
Yeah.
to rediscover in a lot of ways who it is that you are. And boy, is that fucking hard.
It's so hard. I'm curious what you tell what you tell the men that you work with. How do you talk about that?
I mean, there's a sort of standard thing that I say is you will be okay, I promise. And that sounds so tr maybe trite, but it is the truth. And then that hopefully leads to my one of my biggest missions is to as best I can try and reduce the number of men that kill themselves every day. I think if you say something like you're going to be okay, that at least starts a conversation and allows them to open up and say, but this and but that and but this. And I would say that typically my advice is get into therapy, make sure it's a good therapist. Do not date for at least 1 year. I think it should be more than that in a lot of cases. I wish there was a magic formula, but for sure 1 year. Hit the gym because that's a lot of men find sanctuary in the gym. Listen to my podcast. Read books. Just dive into you. What are you? It's exactly what you said. What? Who are you? Who do you want to be? And it's hard. It's really hard. What a lot of men do is a couple things. And I was guilty of all of these, so I speak from experience. They dive into the next person they can find. And I did that a lot, and it didn't help at all. Like not even a little bit. I got very, 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 I'm going to say very as many fucking times as I can,
Go ahead, say
angry.
it again.
I was very angry. I was very angry.
Oh,
Because
yeah,
I
I
was so
bet.
hurt and I didn't know what to do with that pain. So I turned it to anger. And that's what a lot of men do. And so that's another thing that I try to tell them to listen, anger can be a good fuel, but you can't run it all the time. You're gonna take your inability. This is what a lot of men, and I know some people don't like that I say this shit, but it's the truth. Some men do not have the ability to handle their emotions, and so they turn it to anger and they make it everybody else's problem, right? Road rage, fucking, people shooting people. And it's just because men don't know how to handle, not all men, settle down, everybody. Just a lot of us. Me, I didn't know. I was a very it's akin to taking a toddler's toy away and they throw a fit. Now, I'm not saying that losing your wife and your family is the same as losing your toy as a kid, but the reaction is very similar. And it's because we're told to man up, to quit crying, to stop being a bitch, to get over it. I mean, I can't tell you how many times someone told me to get over it. Just get over it.
Jeez.
Oh, it's and what happens is because not only can it turn to anger, but then the anger can also turn sort of inward. And then, a lot of men, I wear this, and I say this as often as I can, is I wear this bracelet here from Mr. John Taylor. John was a member of my support group, and unfortunately, John took his life. And it to the rate of 105 men a day, the last figures in the U.S. alone, and 38 of those men are divorced. And it's just sad and unnecessary, and I'm trying to do as much as I can to prevent it, but it sounds to me like it's a very similar journey. And I wonder, it leads me to wonder what is the Maybe there's a few, but what are the things that your clients struggle with the most in their journey?
Well, one of the things I think that you just touched on is difficulty feeling their emotions. So we were just talking about anger, and anger is so fascinating. It's this emotion where if you pull back the layer of anger, what's underneath it? There's always something underneath that anger.
Yes,
Usually
100%.
sadness, grief. But if we get stuck at the anger part, we don't allow ourselves to feel through all the depth and the complexity of our emotions. There's so much more underneath that anger.
Do
And
you
we
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Do
No, that's
you
okay.
have more male or female clients, if you can say?
Female. Because the
So
majority of people who attend therapy
females.
are female identified.
I mean, I'm not
But
surprised by
especially in my
that.
niche.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Why do you think that is? In terms of your niche, why do you think that is? I mean, I think the broader answer is maybe it's different. I don't know, but for
Well,
you.
I think my niche is just a reflection of, it's just a microcosm of the larger society. But why? I mean, you touched on it. Societal expectations, cultural expectations, toxic masculinity, I mean, gender roles, yada, 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 all the things that, how we have been socialized as people, as humans, as gendered humans.
Do you think that'll ever change? Or do you think it is changing?
That's a great question. I think it can change. I think it will change. I think it is changing. I mean, our understanding of gender is changing, right? Like, now we still have such a long way to go, but now, I mean, there is much more of an understanding of, for example, trans folks now, much more so than there was years and years ago, right? In my parents' generation. So, yeah, I think we're inching along at a snail's pace. I think we are making progress. We have so much progress to make. But yeah, I think our understanding of gender and just who we are as humans and how we show up in the world is shifting and changing.
In
Yeah.
terms of your healing, because it sounds like you were a child of narcissistic parents,
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
what was sort of the big thing that helped you heal and grow throughout your journey? Like, is there one thing you can point to, or a couple of things maybe that you can point to?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I mean, I think that I view healing as a lifelong journey, and there's just so many things, that have been helpful, and every phase of the journey is new and different, and it's like every new phase, it's like, okay, this is what I'm working on. But I will point to one thing that has been super powerful, and that is the idea of radical acceptance. Radical acceptance changed my life,
Yes.
and
Please talk about that.
this is the idea that instead of fighting with reality and grappling with it and shaking it by the shoulders and saying, "No, you're not the way I want you to be. Why are you?" It's accepting the reality as it is without trying to change it, without trying to control it. And for me, where that came in hand, I mean, because we could use acceptance every single day of our lives. But for me, where it came in handy was accepting the fact that my parent wasn't going to change. I am never going to have the relationship that I want with my parent. I am never going to have that loving, caring, deeply empathic, emotionally intelligent relationship that I will have with my parent that I've always wanted, that I've always hoped for. So, this hope, this fantasy that I was hanging on to, when I met that with radical acceptance, I was able to let that hope die, which sounds totally morbid. But it was so liberating and freeing for me that I could f it, radical acceptance helped me to face that devastating truth and something that I was living in denial about. Like, yeah, my parent will change. They'll change. They can do it. One day I'll have this loving relationship. Once I was able to accept that, I was met with this huge wave of grief and sadness, but I was also able to move forward.
Is
And
there
that was
a book that you would recommend on radical acceptance, or a, I don't know, any resources around that?
So where I learned about radical acceptance is through DBT, dialectical behavior therapy,
Okay.
which is a therapy that I practice. So you could look up radical DBT, radical acceptance, if you Google that, and you'll get some stuff. There is a book called Radical Acceptance by, I think it's by Tara Brach. And that's more focused on like acceptance of your emotions, but it's still very helpful. Yeah, I'll see if I can do some digging and see if I find a good book on it and send it to you.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Listen, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Before I ask my last question, I want to, give the opportunity. I know you mentioned some things earlier, but how can people find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you if they want to work with you?
Yeah. So, you can find me on Instagram at Taylor Damiani. I have a Facebook group for adult children of narcissistic parents. But yeah, if you go to my website, I have a website where I run a group for adult children of narcissistic parents. It's just reclaimyougroup.com.
Awesome.
And you can find me either way. Send me an email that way.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you. Thank you so very much. As you
Yeah, you're
know,
welcome. Thanks for having me.
the last question I ask everybody is, what words of wisdom would you impart to a man who is just beginning his divorce journey?
I think I'm going to go along with the theme of our conversation about emotions. And I'm going to say, allow yourself to feel your emotions. We have to feel it to heal it.
Such a cheesy but true line.
So cheesy.
But it's true. I agree. Taylor, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. I will give you a heads up when this is out. And if anyone has any questions, I'll be sure to direct them your way. So thank you again for doing this. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thanks for the work that you do. Important
No.
stuff.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. Since my separation in July of 2019, I have done an incredible amount of work on myself. I've had many different therapists, life coaches, and went through different programs. I've taken all that I've learned and put it into my own program called Forged by Fire. If you are interested in having me help you navigate your divorce, please hit my website, risingphoenixdivorcecoach.com. I look forward to working with you.